You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Public Radio. The following program has been made possible due to contributions from Chocolates, show that special someone how you feel and potentially kill their dog. Chocolates. Also, Roses, looking for a way to blow $50 on something that will die in a few days? Buy her some roses. And of course, restraining orders. They have your name on it, someone else's name on it, and are usually in regards to your strong feelings about said person. Sounds like a Valentine to me. Restraining orders. And now, an evening with the authors. I am your host, Dana Glass. Hello and welcome, loyal listeners, to this, the second episode of season 3 of An Evening with the Authors. We are sitting on the verge of Valentine's Day, and unlike every other year that I can remember in my life, I am not filled with a sense of dread and loneliness, because I am with the people I care about most, my producer Bernadette, and intern Marley, and of course Gustavo, the maintenance man, and Jim or Jeff? Oh no, the man at the front. Kev? No. Well, this is embarrassing. Regardless, I am feeling quite good. I am in the new, recently renovated studio for our program here at the Big Pretty Public Radio Studios. And I must say, I don't know that I have ever felt as good as I do right now. My therapist says I might just have made a major breakthrough, and also the medication dosage is a vast improvement. Without further ado, I say let's jump into this evening's guests. Our first author is a private petty detective. He will read from his memoir, Mildly Inconvenienced and Majorly Infuriated. This is Richard Nightingale.
Hey there, Dick Nightingale. Private petty detective. If you don't know what a private petty detective is, well, I go around investigating things of the petty variety. These are true things that happened to me. And I'm going to read you some chapters from some stuff that happened last year, so buckle up, because things are about to get interesting. It was a hot and humid day. One of those days so hot and humid you could swing a Dixie cup through the air and catch a shot of water. Meteorologists said the heat was supposed to break with a downpour around noon, but it was near dusk and there was no rain to speak of. I was beginning to wonder whether that man knew what he was doing. I scrolled through my phone for leads, nothing but ads for Japanese toilet lids. You look up a bidet one time, and suddenly the internet thinks you are obsessed with commodes. Just as I was about to clock out for the day, my door burst open. The woman who stepped through looked like a stereotype from an old detective novel. The kind of gal who would be called a dame. And there's nothing I hate more than a tired literary trope. But there also wasn't any other way to describe her. Ravishing red hair, ample bosom, and legs that went on longer than an unabridged copy of Moby Dick. She was the whole package. Dick Nightingale, she said. Another thing I can't stand. This woman had looked up my address, arrived at my building with a placard that says Richard Nightingale, Private Petty Detective, walked past my secretary, who greets every person that walks in with a pleasant Richard Nightingale's office, how may I help you, and walked up to a door bearing my name engraved on frosted glass. But still, she was somehow confused. How may I help you, miss? I'm sorry, Mr. Nightingale. I don't have time for pleasantries. That I liked. Quick and to the point. This was going to be a good scoop. She continued. I read that you were the one who busted the ring of people who parked slightly over the parking lines. Not enough that it was on purpose, but enough that it ruined your day by forcing you to park further away from your office and, well, I think I've got something that's on a whole nother level. I stopped her. You mean another level? What? That's what you meant to say. Something that's on another level. Another isn't a word, though I suppose you could consider it a contraction of the word another, but you wouldn't go around saying a whole another level. Now, would you? That would be ridiculous. Our interaction paused for a moment. I'm sorry, sir, but I could care less about that. You see, there's something that happened, and I have proof, and you couldn't care less, I interjected. If you could care less, then you have room to care left. It could be any amount, a little caring, a lot of caring, but if you could not care less, then you have no cares left at all. Jesus Christ, she said. This is totally not worth it. She turned, slammed the door, and stormed out, her voice trailing behind her. Why do you have to be so fucking petty? They don't call me a private petty detective for nothing, I quipped to myself. In her haste to leave, she had forgotten her bag. Peeking out of the top was a manila envelope. Those never contained anything good. Written on the front were the words, Zipper Etiquette Evidence. I played the contents and went agape. Dash cam footage of this poor damsel not being led into a line of cars in traffic in what was very clearly a zipper-appropriate situation. But more impressive, she had documented the license plate numbers of all of them. 20 minutes and 300 cars worth of footage to comb through? It was going to be a long night of public shaming. So after that, we have a few chapters of me going through the footage in a lot of detail and posting it all over the internet, and let's pick up chapter 5. How's that sound? The post I made to the mildly infuriating subreddit had amassed over 500,000 upvotes. Her story had gone viral, but I still hadn't heard from the mysterious woman. I respected her privacy enough not to rummage further through her belongings, but then again, maybe it would have been rude not to try and find her name. Still, there was one thing bothering me. That truck with the untraceable plates. I ran them through every database I could think of to no avail. All I had was the name and address of a small Japanese company, Kyoto Flow. That name seemed so familiar. Only one choice remained. I had to fly to Japan. I would not rest until every car in that video felt the full magnitude of what they had done. Getting to the airport was easy enough. Despite 4 near accidents with texters, I had the footage to shut them down, but that would have to wait. The airport has always been a hive of the worst types of people. Those who leave their trash behind at the tables, people who don't know that they had to remove their laptops despite the multiple warnings before and in line. And worst of all, the travelers who take all of the available outlets to charge their laptop and phone despite the fact that their laptop has more than one perfectly good USB port. There wasn't time to put all of them in their place, no. But I was able to unplug the extension cord connected to that outlet hogger. I love a small victory before a flight. The next 20 pages are about my frustrations with the boarding process. So I'm going to skip ahead and go just past that. Finally, I was comfortable in row 23, right by the window. As I began to doze off, I felt a tickle on my elbow. It was a foot on my armrest. One attached to the human being behind me. A human being who, in this moment, shot to the top of my to-destroy list. It had been a long day, and I had even more ahead of me. I didn't want conflict, so I chose the quickest way out. I soaked my hands with some bottled water, let out a phony sneeze, and sprayed the hell out of those crusty abominations. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize your feet were on my armrest. And with that, the feet were gone. That'll teach the fucker. My seatmate turned to me. He was a middle-aged Asian man with slicked back, stark black hair, and thick-rimmed glasses. With a near impenetrably thick Japanese accent, he began to speak. Ah, Mr. Nightingale, you are a hard man to track down. He slid a business card across my tray table. It said, Kyoto Blow. I work in the bidet business. You and I have a lot to discuss. To find out what happens next, you'll have to buy my book. Thanks for indulging me.
Richard Nightingale showing us exactly how to make a mountain out of a molehill. Moving on. Some call our next guest a hero. Others call him an economic blessing. Men love him. Women fear him. Please enjoy this reading from Hasno Takana, the inventor of animated boob jiggle.
My primary medium is not the word, but rather a Technicolor cartoon of a high school girl naked. So please bear with me as I share with you my story. The pre-90s was a difficult era. Animation was bursting, thrusting itself into new directions, expanding men and some women's sexual fantasies, all without boob jiggle. How much porn could we watch with stiff titties? Today, it is impossible to watch The Lion King, knowing when you put the VHS in that none of the lion's chests will truly roar. I wanted to pass my technique onto Beyoncé, but I was left devastated and utterly unhorny when I did not see it in the final cut of the new Lion King. Why even make another? The technical capabilities were unknown at first. How far could we go? I will start at the beginning. It was 3 a.m. on December 26th, and after staying up for 26 hours straight, I discovered the first technique to make one boob jiggle. Previously, we only had managed to make a nipple jerk. I immediately went to my director and told him the news. He said, "You've been working on what?" "We are working on a series about the American presidents for children." I knew that, of course. I also knew that Mary Todd Lincoln's tits were massive. And it would be downright uneducational for us not to portray them in lush accuracy. These children needed the truth. Many years after we released that, a man came up to me and he said, "Tanaka-san, is that you? You helped me discover my fetish for American cucks. I think about that every day. Later, in 1996, the Pokemon Company asked to use our technique. I had recently found a way to use our tech in pixel art, so that every single square of the boob could jiggle. Not just the nipple square. The Pokemon Company had actually been working on a technique that would make Pikachu's balls drop. A perfect match. Of course, the technology has seen a lot of great improvement over the years. Not just in tit size, which we've been able to achieve a 4-to-1 breast to body ratio. But also in marketing. More and more companies are coming to us about our products and hopefully on our products. Anime has presented several technical difficulties. But when we succeeded at making Gundams and mechas titties bounce, we knew where the iron blood was. Our animation division had no trouble getting the breastplate of the Gundam to go up and down. But it was our sound director who had the most difficulty. I told him, that's not what giant robot tits sound like. Would you want to masturbate to something that sounds like a car engine failing? He hesitated. And I knew this was because his actual answer to that question was yes. But he had not found the confidence to let his fetishes be known in the workplace. Additionally, we created a special Gundam model that had boob jiggle implemented. This cost an extra 25 cents to implement in every model, which we gave a markup of $17 in the end figure. Everyone appreciated that. This is our story. This is my story. I can see its effects even here on this alien. Would its back not need to be so strong if its front did not have such massive titties? We all know, Mr. Monster. We all know how easy it is to animate ball jiggle. We see it everywhere. But titty jiggle, that's special. I dedicate this to my mother. Thank you.
Hasno Takana, a true visionary, even if mildly confused on anatomy. Next up is Mara Phineas. She is a mermaid on a mission. She has led hundreds of ocean cleanup efforts and organized 24 polar bear rescues. Nicknamed the Aquatic Lorax, she speaks for the seas. And her newest book, Were Mermaids Not Your Maids, she speaks about the reality of ocean pollution and what you can do to help. We will now enjoy this reading with a little help from a sea witch. It's Mara Phineas.
I did receive some help from a sea witch, and for those of you who have seen The Little Mermaid, you know you have to pay with your voice. So I just took a spare on my way out, and this is what I'm stuck with. So bear with me, you poor unfortunate souls, because here we go. I'm happy to be here. I'm real. Mermaids are real, you know. You know, that's a common misconception. We're not just a delusion of a sex-starved sailor who saw particularly a curvaceous manatee. No, we're real. We're really out here. I wrote this book, We're Mermaids, Not Your Maids, because you throw a lot of shit in the ocean. That's what it comes down to. You do. And we looked at our data as the ocean inhabitants, and we looked at all the plastic you fucking throw in there, and we saw there's a lot of mermaid shit, a lot of scales. You know, the other day I saw a cup that said, I'd rather be a mermaid. Would you? Would you? Because you wouldn't be buying a kitschy little cup at Five Below. No, you'd be out here pulling straws out of turtle brains, you know, so... Maybe be careful what you wish for. We tried a while back. We tried to send sharks to tell y'all you were really fucking up with the oceans, to tell you guys. But you know, they bit couple 2-3 kids off the coast of Florida, and y'all got really upset. We were surprised too. You know, when we looked at the research, we thought, why the sharks? Yeesh, they're a lot. You know, who wants to send the sharks? But you all, we saw the Discovery Channel, and you all have a whole week devoted to them, so we thought it was worth a shot, but apparently not. Learned our lesson there. And you know, we did a lot of research on you guys. We really did. We also saw you really like dolphins. Y'all like dolphins. Dolphins are dicks. We weren't going to send dolphins, you know. That was off the table entirely. Not going to send dolphins. They're inconsiderate. They're loud. They're blowhards. We call them the humans of the ocean. They're the absolute worst. We couldn't work with them. No way. No how. Absolutely not. So I'm here. I'm here on behalf of the mermaids and the rest of the ocean to talk to you asshats. Because nothing's getting through. And I don't want to be here, you know. You think this is what I want to do? You think I enjoy spending my time pumping out pelican bellies? You think I like all the plastic? You think I want to do that? You think that's how I want to spend my time? No, it's not. It's not. It's not what I want to do. Not at all. Jesus Christ. I am a middle-aged mermaid, you know? I'm 347 years old. The prime of my life. You know, this is not where I want to be. I don't want to be here talking to you guys. I want to settle down. I want to wreck a ship. And then I want to just... You know, like lay back and relax and just pick off marooned sailors for a couple months while they struggle to survive, you know? You know, and then really start my second act strong. But I can't do that. Gotta take my time to save the ocean and to talk to you assholes. So hope you're listening. You know, I don't wanna be, I don't wanna travel around the world spending my time, you know, dislodging Faygo bottles from blowholes. That's not what I dreamed of when I was a little sea lass. That's not, you know, what I thought I'd be doing with my 300s. You know, and I have it. It's getting to me. You know, I haven't even drowned a sailor in like 3 weeks. Nothing. Dry spell entirely. Cause no. Cause you assholes can't you know find a recycling bin for your 3-gallon fucking cup of root beer. You had to get at the Speedway on your home, for Christ's sake. Couldn't stop anywhere else. Ugh. I'm sorry. You know, I didn't come here to yell at you guys. And I'm sorry. Sorry. I just, but holy buckets. Can we talk about those fucking sodas? Why? They're huge. People go over Niagara Falls in things smaller than what you fuckers drink with your lunch. You kidding? Holy buckets. Speaking of holy buckets, you assholes, you know you have to have a specific plastic piece of something for every goddamn thing you do. For straining noodles, colanders, are you kidding me? Put a lid on, tip it. You bunch of fucking Kardashians. You know, Kardashians, I hope that plastic doesn't end up in the ocean, because I'm not coming back and talking to you guys after that. We're done. Done. Guys, I'm so sorry. I didn't come here to yell. I'm really worked up. It's a lot of stress. No one's listening, you know. But I did bring some actionable, helpful things that you guys could do if you wanted to help. Do you guys want to help? Do you want to help? Okay, thanks. Maybe you guys were the good ones, I guess. Okay. So some tips that I brought along. You can use reusable straws. Everyone know reusable straws? Because I swear to fucking Poseidon, if I have to pull one more out of a turtle brain, I'm not holding back the tsunamis anymore. So that's a good one. A couple, two, three of the reusable ones. Stash them at work. Stash them in your car. Wherever you snort your cocaine, I don't care. Be responsible with your habits, you know. Number two, you could think about somebody else for a fucking change. You know, it could be anybody. Just someone besides you, and how you gotta stop for your fucking McDonald's and pitch it out the damn window. Okay, I'm back to yelling. I'm so sorry, you guys. Didn't want to yell. Another thing you could do is you can use reusable chopsticks. You can just stash them in your pocket or in your bag or wherever you want to put them so that you don't have to use a fucking single-use plastic dingle hopper every goddamn time you need a snack, you know? It's a good one. I like that one. Reusable bamboo. Bamboo is a good one there. You guys have bamboo? Bamboo chopsticks, yeah. It's a good one. This is one of my favorites. A reusable bag when you go by the store. Just reuse one. What else? Let's see. My last tip was, you know, when you do like just a one night, like a costume or something, don't buy a whole bunch of plastic pieces you can't reuse and waste a whole bunch of paper. You know, it's really unnecessary. Just think about what you're doing before you use non-renewable resources. So that's pretty easy. Those are a couple things that are in the book that I wanted to share with you guys, and I appreciate you listening to it. But I know that sometimes words, they're lost on people. You all, you've proven that many times. But a song is something that I have seen you guys really respond to. But here's the problem with this voice that I stole, the singing part's real garbage. So bear with me. I've prepared a song for you guys this evening, okay? I think you might know it. I think you might recognize it, okay? Look at this trash. Doesn't it suck? That soda pop rings can strangle a duck. Seeing this garbage, you think, damn, it's just everywhere. Look at this cup, one use and toss. Speed and convenience become your boss. Bottles and wrappers and combs, polluting everything. I've got jump ropes and yo-yos aplenty. Styrofoam pellets galore. You want fidget spinners? I got 20. What the fuck? Who needs that? What's that for? Sorry. I want to be where the people are. I want to smack their faces for buying shit they don't. What do you call it? Oh, need. Flapping your flips, you don't get too far. Legs are, laws are required for regulating human behavior and, what's that word again? Greed. Up where they waste, where they consume, where they avoid all the impending doom. Humans, you suck. Seriously, fuck. Clean up the world.
Quite an eye-opening reading from Mara Phineas. Our final author of this episode is a self-diagnosed pathological crier. He cries constantly for no reason at all. He will now read from his book, The Cry Journals. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and on either side, this is Wesley Snivels.
My name is Wesley Snivels. And I'm a pathological crier. It happened on my 9th birthday. I had just gotten the Schwinn bike I wanted, and I started to cry because I was so elated. And I haven't stopped since. A lot of people ask Wesley, why do you always wear this blue sweater? And I'm like, because it's the color of depth and stability. A lot of people have told me, Wesley, you're the strongest person I know. Mainly because I think they don't realize how strong my face muscles are. And that is why I have decided to write this book for you this evening. I'd now like to read a few excerpts from my book, The Cry Journals. People ask me, Wesley, why is your Kleenex box smashed? Because I participate in approximately 183 hugs a day. Some people just need reassurance that everything's gonna be okay. Anyway, my book, The Cry Journals. This one's done. October 3rd, 2006. Just another normal day. I was going to the grocery to get some tomatoes for a salad. I got in my car and I looked at the gas gauge and it was full. Then as I was pulling out of my driveway, my neighbor in a panic waved me down and told me to stop. He had just picked a bunch of tomatoes out of his garden and handed me 12. He had just given me for free what I was gonna have to go to the store and pay for. How convenient was that? That one's done. July 13th, 2007. It's my birthday. Oh, My family doesn't call me because they don't like the reminder of what happened on my 9th birthday. And plus, every year on my birthday, I ship each one a swim bicycle. Because I want them to be as happy as I am. Sometimes they'll call to yell at me, but I don't hold it against them. They just need a punching bag to get their frustrations out on, and they know I can take it because I'm so headstrong. That one's done. Sometimes I get it in my mouth. But it's okay because the taste is growing on me. December 8th, 1999. My first job as a bank teller. Sometimes my tears go down my throat. But that's okay, because I could use the extra calories. Job interview with Tammy went well. She said, "Wesley, what's your greatest strength?" And I said, "Probably my positive attitude and upbeat outlook on life." My glass isn't just half full, it's overflowing with my happy tears. And I don't have any weaknesses. Sorry to get a puddle on your floor, Tammy. First day on a job, Tammy said, "We need more ones." And just at that moment, a waitress came in who had been collecting $1 bills for over 3 years. I counted over 2,600 of them, and I happily said, "We fixed it, Tammy, we did it." We did it. And just then, a robber came in and pointed a gun at me, and he passed me a note, and he tried to take all the ones I just got. And I said, "Tammy's gonna be real upset with you." But then he put his pistol down on the counter, and then he looked away, and I picked it up and pointed it at him and said, "We need more ones." And he ran out. And then they told me that I was a hero. And then the news station came in to report on the accident, and they wanted an interview with me until they started to interview me. I guess I'm just too happy for local news. March 21st, 2002. I broke my arm from getting my sweater caught in the escalator at the mall. It had pulled my arm backward and broke my radius bone, and it destroyed my sweater. But ironically, I had gone to the mall that day to buy a new blue sweater, so I was okay. And then the mall security wanted to be sure that I had broken it there and not somewhere else, because they showed me footage of me crying before I entered the mall. When I got to the ER, the doctor told me to stop crying and all the commotion, I forgot that I was doing it. Then I asked if I could go around and talk to all the children and be a positive role model to them, and he said no. I've been Wesley Snivels.
Truly confusing messages from Wesley Snivels. That will conclude the readings for this episode. I would like to thank Eric Salazar for providing the song Soul Search that serves as our intro music on the program. I'd like to thank Kaiju in Louisville, Kentucky, and the White Rabbit Cabaret in Indianapolis, Indiana, for hosting our live productions, which you heard on this program. I'd like to thank all of the authors who took part in this episode, and I'd like to thank you, loyal listeners, most of all, for spending an evening with the authors. I am Dana Glass. Good night.